Thank you, Ben. Now it's quiz time. Yeah. The students in the audience are smiling and not making eye contact. Great. So, fill in the blanks. Development is the process to realize what? Somebody said something, but I couldn't hear. Excuse me? Positive change. Very good. What else? Health. That's right. Something that rhymes with human rights. That's right. So development is a process, is the right to a process to realize human rights, including the right to health. And that will bring change. Right? Now, remember the three circles that Ben showed you? Do you remember what was written inside those? What was on this one here? International law. Very good. What was on this side? Human rights. And here? Public health. Which means that you're at the right conference. Great. And what was in the middle, in the intersection of those three circles? That's right. Actually, health. The health of the communities of the countries and where we're working. So I want you to remember those three circles, and then we're going to try to see how those help us in our work. How can we apply? How we as public health professionals can do something about it. And that's my name. And in case you wonder, I'm the president of a company that is dedicated to reach the Millennium Development Goals. I disclose that I'm really convinced that the goals need to be achieved, and I work so that they must be achieved. I also, you may remember from the program that we have two objectives. We want to discuss simple ways that you can apply this approach, those three circles, in your work every day, and what are the challenges that as public health professionals we find to apply rights-based approaches. I also want to say that many of these things are written in this wonderful book whose proceedings go to APHA to help students attend the annual meeting. And Ben's chapter is also here, so I really encourage you to visit the booth of the publisher, Springer. I would like to say that the first step is to know the legal framework. How many have read the International Declaration for Human Rights? Raise your hand. Very good. Yeah, okay, you could read it. How many have read the Declaration of the Right to Development? It's about 3 pages long. Good, 2 people. I suggest you Google that for homework. And there's very good language, as Ben was saying, there's very good language that you can use to advance this discussion about human rights, law, and public health. Another important document is the Millennium Declaration. How many have read it? Raise your hand. Very good. It's 9 pages long. As you can see, it's very short. You can read it on the plane back. Okay. And it does talk about the goals, but it talks about many other things, too, that as public health professionals, we need to know. So know the legal framework, know the International Declaration. Some are legal documents, some are not. They are not treaties like the Millennium Declaration or the Paris Declaration, but so many countries have signed off on these documents, except sometimes the US. And it's important that, for instance, you also remember the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. I have a special interest in that. I have 3 daughters. I also encourage you to read the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and the General Comment 14, which really explains what Dr. Benjamin was talking about yesterday, about the highest attainable level of health, the right to the highest level of attainable health. So remember to remember those documents and have them handy in your practice. Also, most people, when they think of the goals, they just think of these little pretty pictures. But women are not just wombs. Okay, and children usually don't carry teddy bears. And we are not that friendly working all together. So these are goals. And as goals, we need to know that these are development goals and they are tools, but they are in the concept behind many principles that are included in this document and you need to become familiar with. Also, you need to know who the right holders are, the communities we're helping, who the duty bearers are, and in the right to development, the whole international community are involved. And we as public health professionals, we are the advocates. Sometimes when we work for the governments, then we also become duty bearers. So in this context, we say that global health is a human right, and that global health is then someone's duty. The issue is whose duty? And that means it's the duty of developed and developing countries that need to work together. And we, as Ben was talking about, all the difficulties and the imbalance in the way that foreign assistance sometimes is provided in order to influence policies and not so much to advance the development of the countries. Now, I also want you to remember that in this context of development, global health, I usually summarize it in this simple formula. Global health means the practice of public health. It also means to provide development assistance. Most of the development assistance is through people that work for international organizations. And we as workers, as development workers, need to understand the interaction between public health, development assistance, and accountability. There's not much monitoring evaluation going in the projects, and the failures are not sometimes discussed as much as they should, so we could all learn. So remember these formula and as a way of trying to understand how the development process is going to work in global health. Our role as public health professionals, as you read the international declarations, our role is to respect, protect, and fulfill human rights. That's what the development process is all about. And as public health professionals, we are here to advocate and demonstrate the effectiveness of the public health programs and the development assistance projects that we are implementing. If you read the Millennium Declaration, you'll see that there are certain values that we as public health professionals working in development need to remember: freedom, equality, solidarity, tolerance, and we need to advocate for. The Paris Declaration, how many of you have heard about the Paris Declaration? Okay, I'll talk a little bit about the Paris Declaration. In the year 2005, a number of countries got together in Paris. And realizing that the implementation towards the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals was not moving very fast, they realized that there had to be a number of principles on how development assistance is provided. And in that way, they agreed to these five principles that I like to remember by the acronym OHARA. You have to remember ownership, harmonization of approaches, alignment, managing by results, and accountability. We need to advocate for those principles, especially when we are implementing development projects, when we are trying to improve global health. We need to look at these principles. There's also a number of indicators that go with them. Become familiar with the Paris Declaration. It's a very important tool in global health. And we as public health professionals need to advocate for that. When we are looking at development assistance, when we work in a project funded by USAID, funded by any other donor, how do the principles of the Millennium Declaration, the Paris Declaration, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, how does that work? What can we do about it? So for instance, if we remember that our duty in terms of development and human rights is to protect, respect, and fulfill. So in terms of ownership and alignment, we can protect human rights, particularly the right to health, by promoting ownership and alignment of all the public health programs that are being implemented. For instance, governance. If you work in, for instance, in development assistance, you may have heard about the Global Fund. The Global Fund has a mechanism, which is called the Country Coordinating Mechanism, in which different stakeholders participate, and they decide how the different programs to fight the three diseases, malaria, TB, and HIV/AIDS, how those programs are going to be implemented. And they have to follow the three ones, so there has to be one plan per country, one coordinating mechanism, and there has to be one monitoring evaluation system. Not every donor can go and do their own thing, and the country ignore what's happening. Next, the plans that, for instance, if you're implementing a project, the plan, the work plan that you develop has to be aligned with the country's national health plan and with their development plan. We cannot do that in isolation. It has to support. It's not we working there and the Ministry of Health helping us implement our project. It's the other way around. Our project has to be aligned, has to be owned by the local authorities. Another thing that is very important and is one of the principles of ownership is that donors need to report and estimate how much money they're going to allocate. So countries know how much money is going to come in and how that money is going to be used to advance their health plan or development agenda. It's important that the donors don't create systems in parallel, don't have a parallel supply chain to deliver contraceptives when the country already has a supply system. Let's strengthen what it already exists. Also, we need to respect, and for that reason, we need to harmonize what we do with what the country is already doing. There has to be consensus, for instance, on the comparative advantage of using one approach to promote ORS or to promote mosquito nets or to promote family planning with what other donors are doing. So there has to be a harmonized approach to implement different interventions to advance global health. Sometimes processes are developed by donors and they're too complex, or many donors have different processes. There has to be one simplified way of doing it, and everybody has to use the same approach. There has to be also coordination and communication procedures. There has to be a coordinated mechanism in the country that will allow the harmonization and also the coordination of activities, so you don't have people from three different organizations going to the same province, for instance. And finally, there has to be also the coordination at the global level. For instance, if we say that there are 8 million children that die of preventable conditions every year, or 500,000 women that die of pregnancy-related conditions, why can't we have the community-based organizations work in a network and each account for an average of 80 deaths? How can they prevent 80 deaths? In that way, we would account and prevent those preventable deaths. Also for the women, there's more than 1,000 NGOs working in development. If they all worked in a coordinated way and each prevented 500 deaths, then those women wouldn't die. There has to be, because we know where those women are dying. We know how to prevent it. So why can't we get it done? Why can't we work in a coordinated way in which we are all accountable for? And that's why, using a human rights approach, it's not us being kind and having good intentions and being charitable. It's about us protecting, respecting, and fulfilling the rights of everybody on the planet. And talking about fulfilling, we need to, when we work in global health, when we work in development, we need to look at results. And we need to manage by results, tangible, visible, numbers of people saved, lives improved, numbers of people that are living better. If you go to the Expo, get this book. This is the 2010 Millennium Development Goals Report, and you can see how each of the Millennium Development Goals is progressing. And we are all accountable for this. At the regional level, all these figures represent lives. So we need to remember that. Sometimes when you look at these graphs, it's hard to remember the number of deaths and the number of lives it cost to get to this. Also, when you're working in the field, advocate for the interventions to be managed at the country level. If you're working in a district, let the district team lead and you support them. There has to be one monitoring and evaluation that has to be led by the country. We need to contribute to the national indicators and be accountable for our share of the contribution. There has to be one annual report of the progress so we know how each country is advancing and how each of us are contributing. It's not so much about attribution, but contribution. How much are we going to contribute? How, for instance, are these donors are working in this province and these are the donors in the other province. So we all contribute to the national agenda. And there has to be joint annual reviews and we compare and we share how we're doing. Also about fulfilling the right to development and the right to health. We need to consider mutual accountability between developed countries and developing countries. So there has to be joint decision-making mechanisms and there has to be also transparency. If the country asks a donor why the indicators in this province are not, or why are you implementing these interventions, the donor has to respond. There has to be communication. In one country I worked in, Papua New Guinea, for instance, the donors have to respond why things are being done in 3 months. Within 3 months, they have to send a response, and that response is shared by everybody. Now, this is the second opportunity for donor audience participation. So I would like to have one member of the audience to come here and talk about human rights approaches. Who would like to come? Yeah, so many people are eager to come. Okay, I promise it's painless. And I won't ask your name. Okay, would you like to come? Yes? Yes? Yeah, come over here. Yeah, give him a big hand. Please, you have to come here so you're close to the microphone and they... Okay. Good. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank
the invitation.
You.
Tell me, where do you come from?
Well, originally I came from Ghana and interestingly, as if you knew, I have been part of Hashtag-Wide approach implementation.
Excellent.
MDGs, I went to UN system.
Excellent.
UNFP specifically. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand. But I think... maybe what I can share with you,
yeah.
The right-based approach, in principle, it sounds appealing to international community.
Uh-huh.
It's elegant, I will say.
I like elegant.
But in practice, what happens at a country level,
okay.
Institutional structures to implement some of these programs are not working. And I think the major
uh-huh.
challenge to achievement of Millennium Development Goals are really the levels of governance.
Mm-hmm.
From the national level to district levels, and maybe... how the communities may be willing to participate,
mm-hmm.
but the question is they may not have the capacity. So capacity
mm-hmm.
enhancement might be one approach, but really, for me, my
okay.
experience at a country level, Ghana, probably the challenge is issues of governance.
Issues of governance, and how to build the capacity of communities to exercise that governance,
well,
right?
It's
to participate.
Challenge. Yeah, exactly. It's
excellent.
Challenge.
Okay, good.
Building capacity of communities in a way that they can take ownership.
So there has to be a mechanism for the communities to participate, the women's in the community.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And what's stopping you from creating that mechanism?
Well, a number of factors.
Pick one, for instance.
For example, the donors are also part of the problem.
Ah.
The issue of trying to take ownership for success of a particular
that's
program
right.
is also part of it.
Co-ownership, yeah.
Yes, sometimes they really don't want to somehow relinquish the rights for the community to take ownership, but somehow they feel they provided the funding mechanism. And therefore, they must
that
be attribution, not contribution.
That's right. That's right. That's why when you bring the language of human rights, then the issue of attribution becomes less important
exactly.
because we are all working together.
Exactly.
Okay, so what can you do? Is there one donor, for instance, in the country that you think that you could approach to discuss the Millennium Declaration or discuss how they could... the Paris Declaration principles and discuss how the ownership could be shared?
Once again, I think the problem at the country level, particularly with the international community, they have a deeper understanding of collaboration, pulling resources together. They have that understanding. And I don't think I can speak for Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of the committee, CCM. I have been part of CCM.
Oh, great.
When Global Fund started.
Uh-huh.
I think that is not a problem. The real problem is with the institutions at the country level.
The institutions at the country level.
That, for example, health sector.
Health sector.
It's a major problem.
Okay.
How do they collaborate with other sectors, for them, transportation? In Ghana, vehicular accident is a major factor that kills many people.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, they work in para. So the question becomes, how do they see other sectors as contributing?
How you look at all the Millennium Development Goals coordinated way.
Lack of coordination,
strengthening the institutions, the coordination among the country level.
Absolutely.
Getting the donors to share.
Absolutely.
Okay. What else? What else is there?
Well,
so
from the national level, if there's not that institutional collaboration at the national level, obviously at the community level, it become non-existent.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't exist.
So a similar coordinated mechanism has to exist at the community
level. Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Do you work in one of those communities? Or
no,
for the
past 4 years, I'm a STEM professor. I teach at the University of Northern Colorado.
Okay.
I left Ghana in 2004.
Good. Well, there are a few developing countries here, too. So, we can look at that, too. But are you in contact with some professionals or colleagues in Ghana?
I'm still in contact with. It's very informal, not very formal.
Okay. Informally,
yes.
You think you could share some of these rights-based approaches with them? Coordination?
I think so.
Okay. So next year, you're going to present some of that work here?
Well, I'm hoping I will be able to do that.
Okay. I also hope so, too. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Come here. Come here. I think each of us is on a different journey, and the right to development and the right to health interact in different ways. You influence your students here, you can influence your colleagues, and we can all start speaking that language. Thank you very much for coming from Ethiopia all the way here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Give him a big hand. Okay, I think we have 2 more minutes.
Oh.
What can you tell us about health in Ethiopia?
Allow me to just say what I want to say.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. You have the right to say whatever you want.
Let me give you my background.
Okay.
I have a public health background.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked as a head of what used to be called basic health services in my country.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have worked in 5 developing countries as a UN staff member.
Good.
Mostly dealing with health and nutrition.
Excellent.
Now, just one point.
Mm-hmm.
Economic development and health.
Mm-hmm.
A footnote.
Mm-hmm.
There are economically high-income countries whose health care systems leave much to be desired.
Yeah, we know one.
Okay, not this one. Like the oil-rich countries.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to say in the few minutes you have given me is this. On the international community side, or the so-called donor side, or the aid staff side, I have witnessed a lot of impatience with development.
Mm-hmm.
We are impatient.
Takes time.
I have been in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in Bangladesh. I have been in Burma. I have been in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
As a UN staff member.
Mm-hmm.
Despite my background as a person from a developing country,
mm-hmm.
I had more or less to toe the line for my international organization.
Hmm.
So,
dual loyalties.
We call upon infant mortality reduction by 2000,
uh-huh.
Health for all by so and so. Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
How many international organizations and multilateral organizations do really account for what has happened? How many decade goals have passed through our lines?
And we work for them.
So let me just give you one example. Mm-hmm. I think there is a danger of running away with international goals at the expense of basic development, say, of a health sector. Mm-hmm. Now, in Ethiopia, we find ourselves were running, doing a lot of achievement work. When it comes to maternal mortality reduction, oh, there should have been emergency obstetrical care. We should have had surgeons. We should have had equipment. Mm-hmm. We should have had this and that. But we ran into signing the Millennium Development Goals.
And then they don't follow.
Because these were the sources of international assistance. This was what the world community wanted. Probably APHO also advocated. Mm-hmm. By the way, I come from the School of Public Health in Berkeley.
Good.
Anyway.
So you advocate there too?
Yeah. I am not criticizing what has happened. That is all in the past. But we should be patient with development.
And what do we do next?
Do we have really the humility to ask governments to come up with their own minimum plans, mm-hmm. and make an effort to support the development of their infrastructure, mm-hmm. their human resources, and of course the funding for supplies? I think this is very important for me. Mm-hmm. I have made some of these mistakes, but I am now wiser for
good
it.
Good for you. Thank you so much. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, and there is always mistakes, and the important thing is that we learn from them and we move on. Any other questions? Yes, please, go ahead. Come here, please. Come. Thank you. Give me a big hand. Yeah, good. Thank you for coming, Mercy. Okay, tell me, if your goal is to do something about global health, mm-hmm. okay, now, what's stopping you from doing it now?
All right. He said my background. My interest is particularly on cardiovascular diseases.
Cardiovascular diseases.
Yes.
Okay.
So my goal will be to improve cardiovascular health in Kenya and in Africa, particularly those
in Kenya.
Interest.
Okay.
Stopping me is because cardiovascular diseases and most non-communicable diseases, but I'll talk about cardiovascular diseases, they are not on the agenda because usually when you're talking about infectious disease, to a point
they're
where
not,
when I tell people that I'm doing cardiovascular
right.
Disease for my PhD, okay. they're like, why don't you do HIV? Why don't you do malaria? Why don't you do TB? Like, it's not on the
That's
agenda.
Good.
And the fact that it's not on the agenda, we don't get funding for it. Like cardiovascular
okay.
disease does
good.
Not get
so
funding.
So you said it's not on the agenda. So
yes.
What can you do?
To put it, so advocate. So
advocate.
Right. So I know
good.
I need to advocate. What I'm
advocate.
Not quite clear about is the channels to advocate. Like I'm more for advocating, but what would be the channels for me to advocate?
So imagine if you could advocate to somebody, who would you advocate for?
The UN, WHO, there's
good.
A summit coming up.
Is there not WHO office in your country?
In
Kenya?
Yes, we do have. We
okay,
do have
good.
We do have
anybody
a
else?
Yeah, I mean, like for example, there's a global health, there's a UN summit happening next year in September on non-communicable diseases, which is particularly where that will be discussed.
Very
but
good.
How do we even get there? How do I participate? How is my voice heard? Those are the channels that I'm saying.
Good.
Have to
Does anybody know how to
know.
Get there?
Hmm? So that's the challenge, the fact that mm-hmm. I feel like we should be present, we should be at the table. We are willing to do it. We have the experience, we've seen it. We may have something, we may have a point, we may offer something, but how is it that you get on the table to advocate for it? I think
to advocate. Is there any organizations that you can advocate for? Yeah, there's somebody. Yes, sir? And stay focused.
In a small way.
Stay focused, yeah.
And but no matter what you do, you will not be talking to the UN people. And the thousands of NGOs we heard about, you can go and do some research on them. How much of their money has been spent on themselves and in their own country, not in the developing countries where they want to work.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Very good. She wants to say something and then Daphne.
It's just a comment in addition to what I said.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the starfish story?
Starfish story. Like,
the starfish.
There's a storm and a bunch of starfish goes on the shore mm-hmm. and there's this little buoy and it starts like throwing back in the ocean. And so there's a guy who comes along and says, why are you doing that? There's so many of them. It's all over the shore. He's like, because it just takes one. And so this one particular little starfish right now is changed. Like it's
it does make a difference to this because, one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's right. You just start whatever you are and
mm-hmm. and do your best.
I agree with that. And that those are really good suggestions. And I think I'm actually doing that. I actually
you just started.
We have a research program in Kenya looking at cardiovascular diseases. That's actually where I work. The only problem is that now I've gotten to a point where I go from one community to another. You know, me and my colleagues. We go from.
Write a paper showing epidemiological transition in your country.
Sorry, say that again.
Write a paper.
And I have a presentation about it here tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
But I think I'm looking for.
She wants to say something.
Oh, please go ahead.
The Y-specific recommendations. You have your area of interest and something that you're interested in. You're looking to kind of make the connection to the human rights, the right to coach ideas. You know, there are a lot of resources that exist, and Elvira's slide mentioned some of them. General Comment 14. The reports of the Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health, who does country visits, does country visits to Kenya, but there are thematic reports that are on certain issues, and it's almost like a secret, a secret treasure, some of these UN documents. And so if you can educate yourself a little bit about where those things are and kind of find them and then use them in the way that is useful to you, that's really the secret to this. It is about taking what you're interested in and making it into something, but having the foundation of these instruments and drawing on them. And as Ben said, you know, these are living instruments and living documents. So if you see that there's a gap that exists, use what's there, even if it's a small connection, and you know, challenge the system to bring it to the agenda. So I think I'm happy to point you in the direction of a few websites.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Give her a big hand. I think it's important that we continue this process of asking and helping each other and connecting with each other. There's usually somebody that has the answer to what you're looking for. The important thing is that it doesn't matter what international goals are there, you stay focused on your goal and figure out the way. You don't need to know everything that you're gonna do to get there. Just figure out the next step. And the next step may be just talking with Daphne or talking with others to figure out where to go next. Okay, very good. We have one more question? Yeah, go ahead.
I want to do another plug for the book, which Elvira mentioned, but this is the book that was published and put together by the members of the APHA International Human Rights Committee. The book is called Rights-Based Approach. And one of the chapters is on the Millennium Development Goals, and several others, Ben is co-authoring a couple of chapters, one that has to do with systems. The book is, I think it's $55?
I think so.
And it's for your publishing company, which is Booth 1976 in the Expo Hall. And we're not getting any money from this. The money from this profits of this book are going to a scholarship fund for students to attend APHA. But another thing that you can do, that you all can do, our International Human Rights Committee regularly has scientific sessions here at APHA, and we also have a student poster session that happens every year. So if you're new to this area or new to this work and want to, you know, dip your toe in the waters, we invite you to participate with our committee's activities and also our sessions here at APHA to kind of get your feet wet. So.
Good. Thank you. We have time for one more question. I promise you would have to come to the front.
No, I still have a concern that I wish Ben could address.
Yeah,
please.
The
issue of right-based approach, as I said, it sounds very elegant. I mean, appealing. But the question is, how do you integrate the governance structures within countries to achieve the right-based approach you're talking about?
Well, I think at Elvira brings people to the microphone for that specific purpose, sort of get people to speak out on these issues. The United Nations has no standing army that it can bring to bear on countries when they violate human rights concerns, for better or worse. And so these norms advance because people want them to advance. These are norms that are created by individuals and they're advanced by individuals. And so more often than not, the principal means by which these are advanced at the national level is what is called naming and shaming. That through the work, through the collaborative work of international NGOs, national civil society actors, and transnational groups of epistemic communities, people working on rights-based approaches around the world, countries are highlighted for their failures. New approaches are brought to bear for helping countries achieve these goals. And more importantly, the human rights standards provide indicators by which we can judge whether countries are meeting their goals or not meeting their goals. Because at the end of the day, a human rights framework is only as beautiful. It might be elegant in its words, but it's only as effective as its accountability mechanisms. And so to the extent that accountability mechanisms exist for human rights, they exist in everyone in this room. And I think I speak for Elvira when I say that the best way to realize human rights is to get involved in human rights.
Mm-hmm. It's our role, it's our responsibility. When you make it your own, then you realize that you are in charge of respecting, protecting, and fulfilling. Go ahead.
Thank you for that last comment. That really puts things in a much better perspective, at least for me, because I'm listening to all this, it's all very nice, beautiful, so on and so forth, but looking at countries and realizing that most of the countries we're dealing with do not respect the political and human rights of their own citizens, the health rights are much more secondary. So with political oppression present, a violation of all other human rights present, these sorts of goals are, I think, much more for evaluative purposes all throughout both of your talks. In my mind, I was thinking, give us a good example of where and how these processes are being implemented successfully, not just a little project here and there, but in a broader perspective. And I don't know if there are any that are being successfully implemented.
In the book, you will see that there are some examples in countries where, for instance, I think it was in Nepal, the Doctors Association got involved in advancing human rights and addressing certain violations. I think there are successes, but it's all up to us. When you really realize that it's your responsibility, especially if you live in this country, I think we have a historic responsibility to do something about it, because we are in the top 1% of the population of this planet. So we have a responsibility to really respect, protect, and fulfill other people's rights. And it starts by standing up and saying what you think. And you believe in cardiovascular diseases, go for it. You have all the international law behind you, use it. And it's not going to be easy. And there's going to be people that are going to be against you. Even in this country, we have a health law, a health reform law that is going to be under attack very soon. So it's not easy, but it's worth it. All of the above. All of the above. You have to do what works. Keep trying. Mm-hmm. Good. Any more comments? Yes.
So,
before they chase us out, we can continue.
I really enjoyed your presentations. But
thank you.
As a student, it all seems kind of academic, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, pun, not really good, but as far as all these kind of criticisms of how structured systems work as far as development, but I'm kind of seeing a dearth of resources for getting involved. And you're saying get involved. I would like to get involved,
mm-hmm.
But if we all just get on kind of say, oh, that's great, well, I want to get involved, but mm-hmm. have no sort of formalized way to look at effective resources and tools to actually get involved, especially when you're talking in a framework of such high level policies. If I want to go advocate with the UN or the WHO, I can't just call Yang Ki Moon and say, you know, this is what I want to do. Like,
so what else can you do?
That's what I'm asking. How do I actually do this, and how do I do it effectively, and not just strike out on my own, like every other MPH student that's ever graduated has done? You know, how can I learn from their experiences, from success or failure, in doing this? Does the book have any resources?
Yes, there are resources, and you really need to network with other people that are doing it already. And some people have successes, some people have not. Some have paid with their own life. But it's not an easy job, but it's really important. What I think is that you really need to focus more on what you can do and what you can instead of what you cannot do. I think if you really want to advocate, go for it. Start wherever you can. Keep asking until you get started. And I know of brand new students who have made a difference. So not having experience is not an excuse. You can make it. Yes, go ahead.
If you're looking for practical ways to get involved and you're feeling pretty green, you can come talk to me afterwards. I came to this meeting for the first time last year and got really involved in the International Health Section. And I will say that the best thing that you can do for yourself, if you want to create a voice, is to make yourself visible, even if that's something as simple as starting your own blog or blogging for us. If you want to do that, come talk to me. But I got experience writing about international issues, and I've never worked abroad. Just blogging for the International Health Section, that builds your confidence. And I've had a short article accepted in a practice-based journal that focuses on refugees and internal displacement, and I just submitted another one to them. So you don't necessarily have to have field work to make your voice heard. You just sort of have to build your internal confidence. And there are lots of practice-based journals out there that are done for submissions for anybody.
Good.
And you just have to find them.
She's telling us to go, so can we just say one more word? One more word, just two words.
I'm just going to tell you, like, I don't know if you've ever read the book Extreme.
Maybe you can continue talking during the break. Do you have any burning thing to say, or? Thank you. Get started. Thank you.